course, was to go along with their program, hope his body was disease-free, and if it wasn't, to fight to the death. The woman gently took his hand, turned it palm up, and expertly nicked him with a gleaming silver tool. Ryan didn't flinch.
Big, brave boy.
A trickle of blood ran down his wrist. She carried the sample to the cube, deposited it into a clear vial, then inserted the vial into a slot in the side of the machine. Meanwhile, the others gave ground as Ackerman squared off in front of him, hose in hand. The no-nonsense look in his eyes told Ryan there wasn't going to be time for a discussion if the news came back bad. Mind telling me what a carnophage is?
Flesh-eating single-celled life form. The carnophage eats, reproduces geometrically, eats some more. Then, after a preset number of generations, the whole colony burns out and dies, about the same time as the food supply is gone. Been genetically tailored to have a short lifespan. We're talking a matter of seconds. Otherwise, it wouldn't be safe to release it into the environment. We use it as a field sterilizer.
Not on this one, though. He's prion-free. His DNA looks in good shape, too. No sign of radiation-induced mutation in his chromosomes.
Okay. The fun's over, Ackerman. Put it away.
Right, Colonel.
The man in the skullcap reclipped the nozzle to his hip.
You dodged the proverbial bullet, my friend. If you'd been infected with Ice-9 or had inheritable damage to your chromosomes, we'd have been forced to destroy you.
The way you destroyed every person in this ville?
That was regrettable, but we had no choice in the matter. Sterilization is part of our mission protocol to prevent any possible genetic or infectious agent contamination. Everyone living in this settlement was in some way radiation damaged, either riddled with cancerous tumors or neural system impaired.
So, Ryan thought, Moonboyville hadn't been so fire-blasted pure after all. Not until now, when it was pure dead.
If I'm not infected or rad-damaged, then I'm free to go?
Again came the steel laughter, but this time he could see their faces. They were really enjoying themselves.
You're good to go, all right, but you're not free.
Ryan glared at the one with the longish hair.
What Captain Connors means is that we're taking you back to Earth.
This is Earth, truly.
From your point of view, I suppose it is.
What other point of view is there?
You'll find out in exactly 8 minutes. Until then, I suggest you sit quietly on the curb while we finish our preparations.
The impenetrable black tints returned to their helmets, as if they were fishbowls filling from the bottoms with ink. As he waited for the time to pass and the mystery to be revealed, Ryan scanned the ridgetop. His companions were out there somewhere. Question was, would they do the dumb thing and try to get him out of this mess? He sure as hell hoped not. Considering how hard his captors were to chill, any rescue attempt was doomed to fail. He'd noticed that they'd addressed one another using military rank. In Deathland, such things ordinarily had little meaning. People could and did call themselves anything they wanted. Colonel, Archduke, God. But there was something in their voices, as distorted as they were, and in the way they carried themselves, that told Ryan the references to rank were real. Perhaps they belonged to some far-flung baron's army? If so, there were no badges, bars, or stars. Their only insignia was the word 5 on their breastplates, which meant nothing special to him. Ryan took a good long look at their other gear. All of it was strange, especially the derrick. It was even more massive than it had looked from the ridgetop. It was made up of 3 interlocking sections that, when extended, doubled its overall length. To what purpose, he couldn't guess. JB had been right, though. There were no signs of wear on the superstructure, or of its having been cobbled together out of recycled materials. No acid rain damage, either. Everything gleamed, as if it had been recently swabbed with oil. If the others had been captured with him, they might have been able to put their heads together and come up with an explanation for all of it. Of course, an explanation wasn't worth the price of their lives. It was far better for his friends that they weren't here, facing an unknown fate. Ryan hoped they were on their way back to perdition by now, and that once they arrived there, they had plans to put even more miles between themselves and this place. Up to this point, Ryan could see no opening for himself, no weakness in the enemy that he could exploit to either gain control of the situation or make good his escape. Thus hobbled, It suited his purposes to be placid and obedient. When it came time for him to make his move, at least he would have surprise on his side. One thing was certain, however. Wherever they intended on taking him, he had no intention of going along quietly. From a discreet distance, knowing that he couldn't see her face through the black tint of her helmet, Captain Nara Jurashic studied their prisoner. Her interest was neither purely scientific nor purely military. The way he looked, the way he moved, fascinated her. It was more than his apparent natural grace and strength. It was his confidence, the confidence born of a lifetime of freedom. Freedom not easily won or held. He had killed other men, of that she was sure. Probably more men than he could remember. And he had taken the lives of women, too. As a combat vet herself, she could see it etched in his blade-scarred face, a familiar roadmap of violence. One eye was a savage, perfectly matched to a savage land, and perfectly matched to the needs of the mission. There was so much to learn about this raw and brutal place, its riches and death traps, and such a short time to do it. What better source for this vital information than a true survivor who'd had the singular misfortune of falling into their net? Nara recalled how 16th-century explorers to the New World had returned to the royal courts of Europe with captured native peoples in tow as living trophies. The financiers of conquest had no interest in the history, culture, and social organization of these prisoners. They had only zoo value. The expedition underwriters were obsessed with the acquisition of a single precious metal, easily mined with slave labor, and transportable in wind-powered sailing ships. While their minions grubbed and murdered for gold, the real wealth of the land lay in plain view before them. The wildlife, the trees, the minerals, pure water and soil, vast reserves of petroleum. But above all, the space to grow. With the advantage of 600 years of history, of countless bitter lessons learned, Nara considered her colonizer ancestors ignorant, short-sighted swine. A proper job of conquest and exploitation, a job in which not a drop of precious resources was wasted, took scientific and military precision. It took high-tech information gathering and rigorous data analysis. It also took an understanding of the psychology of the indigenous population, of the minds the environment had shaped. What the Shadow Man held in his head, the full range of his experience on this world, was absolutely priceless. If his knowledge was shared among the five, it could maximize the return to all concerned and minimize the elapsed time. It could save literally billions of human lives. If, on the other hand, his knowledge was hoarded by just one of the five, it would give that competitor an overwhelming advantage in the weeks and months to come. A chime tone in her helmet snapped her out of her reverie. The countdown timer in the upper left corner of her visor showed 1 minute until the gateway reappeared. 59 seconds. 58. Nara took a last look around, drinking in the brilliant sky, the limitless horizons, the expanse and emptiness, the unspoken promise of Shadow World. Of all that awaited her back on Earth, a hero's welcome, an honorary CEO-ship, an assured spot in history, the only thing that really mattered to her now was the guaranteed return trip. A second chime alerted her that there were just 20 seconds left.
Take your positions now. Everyone, stand well clear.
The ground began to tremble underfoot, and once again, a glittering tornado appeared in the middle of the street. When the air in the middle of the street began to shimmer, Ryan had already made up his mind to grab the woman and make her his hostage. But as the earth trembled and the shimmer took solid form, a funnel cloud, spinning, flecked with glittering points of light, his resolve slipped away. It was replaced by awe. Even in Deathlands, tornadoes didn't appear out of cloudless skies, and tornadoes didn't grow brighter and brighter until the light was like a knife point thrust through the center of his eye. He shielded his face as thunder boomed, and the force of the shockwave jolted him back on his heels. When Ryan lowered his hand, he saw the funnel cloud was gone. In its place, in midair, the fabric of space was unzipping. As the slit widened, he choked on an odor, caustic and vile, like burning plastic. In the gap, he saw something, a gridwork of black pushing forward out of nowhere. Ryan held his breath and held his ground. The edges of the opening gaped